A Chinaman, Kuangzi tells, went to sleep. And dreamt he was a butterfly. Later, when he awoke, he asked himself, am I a butterfly dreaming that I am a man? An Eskimo lady who couldn't speak or understand a word of English was once offered free transportation to the United States plus $500, providing she would accompany a corpse that was being sent back to America for burial. She accepted. On her arrival, she looked about and noticed that people who went into the railroad station left the city and she never saw them again. Apparently, they traveled someplace else. She also noticed that before leaving, they went to the ticket window, said something to the salesman, and got a ticket. She stood in line, listened carefully to what the person in front of her said to the ticket salesman, repeated what that person said, and then traveled wherever he traveled. In this way, she moved about the country from one city to another. After some time, her money was running out, and she decided to settle down in the next city she came to find employment and to live there the rest of her life. But when she came to this decision, she was in a small town in Wisconsin from which no one that day was traveling. However, in the course of her travels, she had picked up a bit of English. So finally, she went to the ticket window and said to the man there, where would you go if you were going? He named a small town in Ohio where she lives to this day. 4 years ago, I was talking with Hidekazu Yoshida. We were on the train from Donaueschingen to Köln. I mentioned the book by Herigel called Zen in the Art of Archery. The melodramatic climax of this book concerns an archer's hitting the bullseye, though he did so in total darkness. Yoshida told me there was one thing the author failed to point out. That is, there lives in Japan at the present time a highly esteemed archer who has never yet been able to hit the bullseye, even in broad daylight. The four mists of chaos, the north, the east, the west, and the south, went to visit Chaos himself. He treated them all very kindly, and when they were thinking of leaving, they consulted among themselves how they might repay his hospitality. Since they had noticed that he had no holes in his body, as they each had eyes, nose, mouth, ears, etc., they decided each day to provide him with an opening. At the end of 7 days, Kuangzi tells, Chaos died. Now and then, I come across an article on that rock garden in Japan where there's just a space of sand and a few rocks in it. The author, no matter who he is, sets out either to suggest that the position of the rocks in the space follows some geometrical plan productive of the beauty one observes, or not satisfied with mere suggestion, he makes diagrams and detailed analyses. So when I met Ashihara, the Japanese music and dance critic, his first name is Eryo, I told him that I thought those stones could have been anywhere in that space, that I doubted whether their relationship was a planned one, that the emptiness of the sand was such that it could support stones at any points in it. Ashihara had already given me a present, some table mats, but then he asked me to wait a moment while he went into his hotel. He came out and gave me the tie I am now wearing. After he heard this lecture, which I first gave in Brussels in the French Pavilion, Karl-Heinz Stockhausen said, you should have said, the tie I was wearing yesterday. An old rabbi in Poland, thereabouts, was walking in a thunderstorm from one village to another. His health was poor. He was blind, covered with sores. All the afflictions of Job were his. Stumbling over something, he fell in the mud. Pulling himself up with difficulty, he raised his hands toward heaven and cried out, "Praise God! The devil is on earth and doing his work beautifully." Morris Graves used to have an old Ford in Seattle. He had removed all the seats and put in a table and chairs so that the car was like a small furnished room, books, a vase with flowers, and so forth. One day he drove up to a luncheonette, parked, opened the door on the street side, unrolled a red carpet across the sidewalk. Then he walked on the carpet, went in, and ordered a hamburger. Meanwhile, a crowd gathered, expecting something strange to happen. However, all Graves did was eat the hamburger, pay his bill, get back in the car, roll up the carpet, and drive off. Once when I was a child in Los Angeles, I went downtown on the streetcar. It was a hot day. When I got out of the streetcar, the tar on the pavement stuck to my feet. I was barefoot. Getting to the sidewalk, I found it so hot that I had to run to keep from blistering my feet. I went into a five and dime to get a root beer. When I came to the counter where it was sold from a large barrel and asked for some, a man standing on the counter high above me said, "Wait, I'm putting in the syrup and it'll be a few minutes." As he was putting in the last can, he missed and spilled the sticky syrup all over me. To make me feel better, he offered a free root beer. I said, "No, thank you." One spring morning, I knocked on Sonia Sekula's door. She lived across the hall. Presently, the door was open. Just a crack. And she said, quickly, "I know you're very busy. I won't take a minute of your time." When Sri Ramakrishna was asked why, if God is good, is there evil in the world, he replied, "To thicken the plot." Before studying Zen, men are men and mountains are mountains. While studying Zen, things become confused. After studying Zen, men are men and mountains are mountains. After telling this, Dr. Suzuki was asked, "What is the difference between before and after?" He said, "No difference. Only the feet are a little bit off the ground." Just the other day, I went to the dentist. Over the radio, they said it was the hottest day of the year. However, I was wearing a jacket because going to a doctor has always struck me as a somewhat formal occasion. In the midst of his work, Dr. Heyman stopped and said, "Why don't you take your jacket off?" I said, "I have a hole in my shirt, and that's why I have my jacket on." He said, "Well, I have a hole in my sock, and if you like, I'll take my shoes off." Generally speaking, suicide is considered a sin. So all the disciples were very interested to hear what Ramakrishna would say about the fact that a 4-year-old child had just then committed suicide. Ramakrishna said that the child had not sinned. He had simply corrected an error. He had been born by mistake. It was a Wednesday. I was in the 6th grade. I overheard Dad saying to Mother, "Get ready. We're going to New Zealand Saturday." I got ready. I read everything I could find in the school library about New Zealand. Saturday came. Nothing happened. The project was not even mentioned that day or any succeeding day. An Indian lady invited me to dinner and said Dr. Suzuki would be there. He was. Before dinner, I mentioned Gertrude Stein. Dr. Suzuki had never heard of her. I described aspects of her work which he said sounded very interesting. Stimulated, I mentioned James Joyce, whose name was also new to him. At dinner, he was unable to eat the curries that were offered, so a few uncooked vegetables and fruits were brought, which he enjoyed. After dinner, the talk turned to metaphysical problems, and there were many questions, for the hostess was a follower of a certain Indian yogi, and her guests were more or less equally divided between allegiance to Indian thought and to Japanese thought. About 11 o'clock, we were out on the street walking along, and an American lady said to Dr. Suzuki, "How is it, Dr. Suzuki? We spend the evening asking you questions and nothing is decided." Dr. Suzuki smiled and said, "That's why I love philosophy. No one wins." 2 wooden boxes containing Indian spices and foodstuffs arrived from India. One was for David Tudor, the other for me. Each of us found on opening this box that the contents were all mixed up. The The lids of plastic containers of spices had somehow come off. Plastic bags for dried beans and palm sugar had ripped open. The tin lids of cans of chili powder had come off. All of these things were mixed together and with the Excelsior, which had been put in the box to keep the containers in position. I put my box in a corner and simply tried to forget about it. David Tudor, on the other hand, set to work, assembling bowls of various sizes, sieves of about 11 various sized screens, a pair of tweezers and a small knife. He began a process which lasted 3 days, at the end of which time each spice was separated from each other, each kind of bean from each other, and the palm sugar lumps had been scraped free of spice and excavations in them had removed embedded beans. He then called me up to say, "Whenever you want to get at that box of spices you have, let me know. I'll help you." During my last year in high school, I found out about the liberal Catholic Church. It was in a beautiful spot in the Hollywood Hills. The ritual was an anthology of the most theatrical bits and pieces found in the principal rituals, Occidental and Oriental. There were clouds of incense, candles galore, processions in and around the church. I was fascinated, and though I had been raised in a Methodist Episcopal church and had had thoughts of going into the ministry, I decided to join the liberal Catholics. Mother and Dad objected strenuously. Ultimately, when I told them of my intention to become an acolyte active in the Mass, they said, "Well, make up your mind, it's us or the church." Thinking along the lines of leave your father and mother and follow me, I went to the priest, told him what had happened, and said I'd decided in favor of the liberal Catholics. He said, "Don't be a fool. Go home. There are many religions. You have only one mother and father." Artists talk a lot about freedom. So, recalling the expression, "free as a bird," Martin Feldman went to a park one day and spent some time watching our feathered friends. When he came back, he said, "You know, they're not free. They're fighting over bits of food." He is a large man and falls asleep easily. One evening, driving back from Poughkeepsie, he awoke to say, "Now that everything's so easy, there's so much to do." Then he went back to sleep. Once Bill de Kooning gave a lecture in Philadelphia. Afterward, he was asked, "What painters of the past had influenced him the most?" He said, "The past does not influence me. I influence it." During a counterpoint class at UCLA, Schoenberg sent everybody to the blackboard. We were to solve a particular problem he had given and to turn around when finished so that he could check on the correctness of the solution. I did as directed. He said, "That's good. Now find another solution." I did. He said, "Another." Again I found one. Again he said, "Another." And so on. Finally, I said, "There are no more solutions." He said, "What is the principle underlying all of the solutions?" On another occasion, Schoenberg asked a girl in the class to go to the piano and play the first movement of a Beethoven sonata, which was afterward to be analyzed. She said, "It is too difficult. I can't play it." Schoenberg said, "You're a pianist, aren't you?" She said, "Yes." He said, "Then go to the piano." She did. She had no sooner begun playing than he stopped her to say that she was not playing at the proper tempo. She said that if she played at the proper tempo, she would make mistakes. He said, "Play at the proper tempo and do not make mistakes." She began again, and he stopped her immediately to say that she was making mistakes. She then burst into tears, and between sobs explained that she had gone to the dentist earlier that day and that she'd had a tooth pulled out. He said, "Do you have to have a tooth pulled out in order to make mistakes?" In the poetry contest in China, by which the sixth patriarch of Zen Buddhism was chosen, there were two poems. One said, "The mind is like a mirror. It collects dust. The problem is to remove the dust." The other and winning poem was actually a reply to the first. It said, "Where is the mirror and where is the dust?" Some centuries later, in a Japanese monastery, there was a monk who was always taking baths. A younger monk came up to him and said, "Why, if there is no dust, are you always taking baths?" The older monk replied, "Just a dip, no why."